Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
They gave us the option of quarantining here in Skagway or going home.
Cruise passengers say Holland America is sending them home on the ferry if they get COVID. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, August 8th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, inflation and low salmon runs are leaving Yukon River families hungry.
And when they finally do get their hands on some fish, they gobble it down and savor the taste.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Some travelers who had tested positive for COVID-19 last week were not allowed to board their cruise ship in Skagway. Instead, they say that Holland America helped them book travel on a state ferry and then an Alaska Airlines flight out of Juneau, the day after their positive tests. KTOO's Claire Strempel has the story.
Diana and Larry Lehrer were supposed to set sail from Skagway on Holland America's Koningsdam after a bus tour through the interior in Canada. But they tested positive for COVID-19 when they reached Skagway.
And the first test went fine, the second one didn't.
Expect to. We're going to fly out tomorrow morning.
Approximately 10 minutes, vessel will be getting underway for Haines. All visitors ashore,
Instead, the couple is on the state ferry, sitting masked near the front windows. The MV LeConte is packed with passengers from Skagway and Haines headed to Juneau.
So they wouldn't let us on the cruise ship because that's asking for trouble. So they gave us the option of quarantining here in Skagway or going home.
Diana says she was aware when she booked the package that if she or her husband tested positive during the bus trip, they wouldn't be allowed on the cruise ship.
We just didn't think it would be us.
She says Holland America took care of them after they tested positive. The company paid for their hotel room and delivered meals.
They walk you through everything, so it was easy to do.
They totally rebooked our travels back. Made it very easy. I mean, like within 10 minutes.
Within 24 hours of testing positive and being denied entry to the cruise ship, they're on a ferry headed home. A Holland America spokesperson said that's not the company's policy. It will only help customers reschedule travel after they quarantine for 5 days. But Mr. Lehrer later confirmed in an email that after one night in isolation in Skagway, a Holland employee did book their travel.
I know that happens.
Skagway Mayor Andrew Cremata says ferry or plane travel out of Skagway for travelers with active COVID-19 cases is not part of the municipality's port agreement with Holland America.
So there have been groups of people with COVID at the airport that have been sent home and they're trying to fly out. And then there's been groups of people that have been put on the ferry.
You don't have to test negative to board one of the state's ferries or an Alaska Airlines flight. But both companies have policies that say you should not travel if you are sick. Laura Bronk and her husband were on the same tour as the Lehrers, and they're on the ferry too after a positive test. Bronk says their tour guide recommended the ferry over a small plane out of town. She says the cruise company offered them 5 nights in isolation in Skagway, but they decided to check out and get on the ferry instead. She says the company will reimburse them for the ferry ticket.
You know, your vacation's over, you might as well go home.
As for the Lehrers, the couple plans to catch flights from Juneau home to the East Coast. They say their symptoms are mild, a runny nose, and a little bit of a cold. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
For the second summer in a row, people who live up and down the Yukon River are facing food insecurity in the wake of Chinook and Chum salmon crashes. But this year, inflation has made things far worse. KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports that 2 years into the crash, Yukon River subsistence users are tightening their belts more than ever.
Maggie Westlock is at the AC store in Amonok near the mouth of the Yukon River. She's picking up a few things for dinner.
Grapes, coleslaw, sandwich.
These are not the foods she and her family of eight prefer to eat. During a normal summer, Westlock would be filling her family's dinner plates and chest freezers with lots of wild chum and Chinook salmon they catch themselves. But fishing for those two species on the Yukon has been closed for two summers because of a sudden and severe collapse. That means Westlock's diet is changing. Her family is relying more on store-bought food. Her grocery bill has gone way up, and inflation is making things far worse. Maggie picks up a small pack of ribs.
$37.10.
On the other side of the store, things are even more dire.
Detergent is very expensive. $62.99, that's Tide. And that Kirkland is $55.99. Expensive, I tell you. And look at these Pampers, Huggies, $84.99. One box.
The final damage is $81.81 for five items. Residents are feeling the loss of the fish 100 miles upriver in St. Mary's, too. Here, neighborhoods used to be filled with the sweet aroma of smoking fish.
What would it normally be like a lot, like in this neighborhood when people were fishing?
Orange and smoky.
Yeah. Orange full of kings and fish.
And now what does it look like?
Nothing. Dry. Nobody's cutting. No. Yeah.
Elder Sophie Beans is standing inside her empty smokehouse with her daughter. The leftover smell lingers in the wooden walls, but it's been 2 years since her smokehouse held fish. Managers closed subsistence fishing for both chum and Chinook those 2 years to try to protect their dwindling numbers. Last summer, the Yukon summer chum run sank to just a tenth of its average size. This year, numbers ticked up slightly for chum, but collapsed even more for Chinook, the Yukon's most prized species. Normally, families would put away hundreds of both species to get through the winter. Now, they're putting away none.
My son Maddie, when he went drifting one time, he caught 700 chums, and it took us 3 days. Seven totes.
And that's not even the kings before that.
Yeah.
Beans usually has three chest freezers full of salmon, but now only one has salmon, and it's only about a third full. That salmon is from 2 years ago, when fishing was still allowed. She and her husband are rationing, taking their fish out for special occasions only. Scientists have been scrambling to figure out why Western Alaska chum and Chinook stocks are crashing. They're starting to hone in on one primary cause for the chum collapse: recent marine heat waves in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska. Dr. Katie Howard from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game says that's linked to climate change. There have always been marine heat waves, but the recent ones are different.
They were more intense, and they lasted over a much, much longer period of time than is typical. And so that is what has been tied to a change in climate, is that it's more extreme when it happens, and the other expectation is that they may occur more often.
But Howard says they're not exactly sure what's impacting the wild Chinook, and that species has been on the decline in many Alaska rivers for a decade now. Many residents also point to another driver behind the low returns of both species: commercial fisheries in the Bering Sea. State and federal managers have allowed these commercial fisheries to continue to operate, even as they've closed the rivers to Alaska Native Yukon River subsistence users. The state says it wants to keep studying the fish before it takes action, but most subsistence users say they don't have time for years-long scientific studies. Many want the state and the feds to more strictly manage the commercial fisheries now. Back in St. Mary's, in a small house with a view of the Andrefsky and Yukon Rivers, lives Jolene Long and Troy Thompson and their six young children. Thompson used to work as a commercial fisherman and has now been out of work for 2 years. He says they're relying much more on the store and are now spending 2 to 3 times more on groceries compared to when the salmon ran abundantly. To feed their family of eight, they spend $400 to $600 a week. They rarely eat protein.
And when they finally do get their hands on some fish, they kind of like gobble it down and savor the taste.
The salmon crash means it's harder for parents to pass on their Yupik culture to their kids. Lung used to cut fish with her oldest daughter every summer. Now, her daughter barely remembers how to cut. But tonight's her night to practice. Most tribal members in St. Mary's have just received a couple of donated salmon from the state.
We cut it here, take out the guts and cut out the head.
Yeah, and then you'd open it on the inside, remember, and then clean all this blood. You see how there's...
For most people in St. Mary's, this donated salmon is the only taste they'll get all year. On the Yukon River, I'm Olivia Eberts.
Still to come in Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage schools compete with fast food restaurants as they struggle to hire cafeteria workers.
Everybody's bumping their starting minimum wage up to try to attract more people, and it just becomes like a bidding war.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
Two people were killed in what police are investigating as a double homicide at a Fairbanks residence yesterday. City of Fairbanks police say 28-year-old Ricardo James DePerior and 18-year-old Rachel Elizabeth Wright were fatally shot shortly before 2:30 a.m. Sunday in an apartment in the Birchwood Homes neighborhood on the city's east side. Fairbanks police ask that anyone in the 1200-block area of Birchwood Homes with security cameras to review video, specifically footage recorded between 1:30 and 2:30 a.m. Sunday, for anything that could be helpful to the investigation. And anyone with information on the case is asked to call 907-450-6550. The Anchorage School District might suspend some school bus routes this fall due to a shortage of bus drivers. In a message to families last week, Superintendent Jarrett Bryant wrote that the district is currently 75 bus drivers short. District Operations Director Rob Holland says that could result in temporary suspension of some bus routes. He says district leaders are discussing possible changes.
We're starting with the basic premise that we will be delivering all of the special ed, special needs routes. And we will push out from there with a focus on the most vulnerable levels of our population.
One option could be to prioritize bus access for the youngest students, but he says district leaders are considering a range of factors. The district is offering both new and current bus drivers up to an extra $2,500 for the first semester of the school year. The first day of school is August 18th. And the Anchorage School District expects changes to food service this year as it also faces a shortage of cafeteria workers, as well as ongoing supply chain issues and the loss of federal pandemic funding. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas reports.
Last week, Anchorage School District leaders warned families of possible changes to bus routes due to a lack of drivers. At Tuesday's school board meeting, Anchorage School Board member Pat Higgins said they're also struggling to find food service workers.
We are going to have a hell of a challenge trying to maintain buses, food service, everything else. You can't go to a fast food restaurant. You can't go to a grocery store. You can't go to a hardware place without a help wanted sign.
Andy Mergens leads the district's student nutrition program. In an interview, he said the district is competing with those restaurants and grocery stores for a small pool of workers.
Everybody's, you know, bumping their starting minimum wage up to try to attract more people, and it just becomes like a bidding war.
Mergens says there are 16 cafeteria manager positions open in the district. It's an improvement from the 22 empty positions they started with last school year. But still, that's 16 schools that can't serve hot meals.
Until we can fill those vacancies, barring any miraculous solution to the contrary, we're going to have to provide those students with a bag lunch for all intents and purposes.
Those are shelf-stable, ready-to-serve lunches. Without cafeteria workers, it might be up to front office staff, custodians, and other school employees to hand them out. Schools that can serve hot meals will still have challenges related to the nationwide worker shortage. Without enough truck drivers, ingredients can't arrive on schedule. That can result in some last-minute menu changes and disappointed kids.
The menu makes a difference because kids will eat what they like, you know, and sometimes they'll show up and, oh, it's pizza day. Yay, we get to have pizza, only to show up and find out that it's not pizza.
In an effort to hire more cafeteria managers, the district's offering bonuses of up to $2,500 to both current and new hires. They're also offering $1,000 to ASD employees who refer successful applicants. Mergen says there are full-time, part-time, and fill-in positions available, and the district will help workers get their food handling certification. He hopes parents might even consider applying.
Particularly at those schools that are going to start without a cafeteria manager, if you want your school to have meal service, then come and sign up and we'll get you in and we'll get you started. And hopefully you can help, you know, help out your kid's school by filling that role.
Changes to federal pandemic funding will also impact student nutrition this year. During the pandemic, many schools could feed students for free, regardless of income, thanks to waivers from the Agriculture Department. That ended at the end of last school year.
Essentially, what happens is we go back to the way things were before COVID.
That means families eligible for free and reduced meals need to fill out an application this year. They can apply on the district's website. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
Ketchikan's Borough Assembly passed a four-pronged measure last week aimed at alleviating the area's housing crunch. KRBD's Eric Stone has the details.
Starting in mid-August, Ketchikan's Borough will allow fourplexes to be built in medium or high-density residential zones without a public planning commission hearing, as long as there's one parking space available for each unit. That includes most residential lots within Ketchikan city limits. Applications for triplexes in low-density zones, largely outside city limits, will also bypass a public hearing as long as they adhere to the same one-space-per-unit parking minimum. Residents will also be allowed to build so-called detached accessory dwelling units or small homes that share a lot with a larger home without a public hearing. The measure also shrinks the necessary lot size for a custom residential zoning system known as a planned unit development from 2 acres to 10,000 square feet. That's about a quarter of an acre. Borough officials say that could allow for the development of tiny home parks within the borough. Developer Bruce Hattrick welcomed the plan during the August 1st assembly meeting. He said Ketchikan's steep, rocky terrain makes it difficult and expensive to develop new lots.
So I think it would help you a lot in the city of Ketchikan or even the whole borough if you could be able to put more housing on the lots you already have. I mean, you got to do something to alleviate the housing crisis, and there's not going to be many new subdivisions.
Assemblymember David Landa said he'd heard no pushback on the plan.
This is what we asked for, and this is what we got, and I haven't heard anyone that doesn't think this is a good idea.
The housing reforms passed unanimously. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
The 2022 Alaska Federation of Natives Convention will be in person for the first time in 3 years this fall. The annual three-day gathering of the state's largest Alaska Native organization was held virtually in 2020 and 2021 due to the spread of COVID-19. The last in-person convention was in 2019 in Fairbanks. AFN represents members from 11 of the 12 regional Alaska Native corporations and more than 191 federally recognized tribes. AFN conventions typically consist of panels on a variety of topics related to Alaska Native people, as well as appearances from state and federal officials and debates between political candidates. Having a convention in person will also mean the return of Alaska Native vendors selling art and artifacts, as well as nightly Kayana performances from Alaska Native dancers. This year's convention will be held October 20th through the 22nd at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage. The theme for this year's gathering will be celebrating our unity. A dozen small businesses in Southeast Alaska are competing in this year's Path to Prosperity competition. All of the finalists will be getting training in business management, and two will walk away with a $25,000 prize. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports.
Aaron Agerman grew up in Wrangell and has watched the tourism industry grow there. On busy summer days, the town of 2000 sees hundreds of visitors disembark small and mid-sized cruise ships. So, Agerman and his wife Mickey thought up a business idea: electric scooters. Like the stand-up ones that kids kick around, but battery-powered.
Totally electric, no emissions or anything else like that. Nice, quiet transportation.
You might have seen them in bigger cities, rented out through phone apps from companies like Lime or Bird. But it would be a new business for Wrangell, and Agerman says they'd be cheap and easy transportation for tourists.
You kind of just pick one of these up and go, and you don't have to worry about placing it. You simply just park it, take a picture, and push end ride, and put the kickstand up, and it's there. And that's all you have to do. You don't got to turn it back in anywhere. You can get from point A to point B and not worry about returning to point A if you don't want.
The scooters could be recharged as needed, which the couple can also manage online. They plan to start with 12 to 16 and grow from there. Agerman and his wife are finalists in the annual business competition run by Spruce Root, a regional nonprofit that promotes economic growth. Spruce Root was started in 2012 by Ha Ani, a subsidiary of Sea Alaska Corporation. For a second year in a row, the Path to Prosperity competition relates to tourism, specifically businesses that continue to benefit local residents. Isabella Haywood is the competition's administrator.
We wanted to make sure that local businesses are really equipped to build businesses in a way that not only like serve the visitors that come to the region, but also channel economic benefits from those visitors deep into their communities.
In October, the 12 finalists will go through a workshop, learning how to polish their business plans. Rebecca Kameka is looking forward to it. She's a baker in Haines and would like to open a small restaurant focusing on tapas, wine, and dessert. Tapas are appetizers in Spanish cuisine and part of Kameka's Cuban heritage.
While people do eat on the ship, you know, I'm thinking a tapas thing is not, you know, you're not really committing to a whole meal. And maybe they're walking around, they're like, you know what, I do want a glass of wine or a beer. Get a small plate or a slice of cake, you know, kind of something a little bougie, I guess would be the word, and a bit atypical for the area.
She's not sure if she'd have a dine-in or walk-in situation, but either way, she's looking forward to more kitchen space. Currently, she bakes out of an apartment. For Kameka, baking is an art form. She tapes drawings of her ideas to the wall.
I'll sketch out my cake designs here and put them up, kind of look at them, you know, up until the wedding, see if I want to make some adjustments.
She says she's glad she's doing the Path to Prosperity competition because she wants to consider all of her options, including possibly contracting with cruise companies. Jim Silverthorne is another finalist. He wants to start a catch-and-release fly fishing competition for steelhead trout on Prince of Wales Island that would draw on tourists every year.
Between all of the native art and the local craftspeople and stuff like that, we're looking at, you know, putting all this together as one realm. And so it would be a pretty big thing.
Silverthorne runs a fishing charter business out of Thorn Bay and says fishermen bring money to the town every summer. He says a steelhead event would start the tourist season earlier, in April, when the sought-after trout are running, and that would bring more revenue to the remote towns on the economically depressed island.
The sales tax that the city gets off of, and then the sales tax that they get off of the grocery store, and those guys are buying gas, they're buying groceries, they're buying booze, they're buying, you know, they're renting vehicles, they're staying in apartments, staying in houses.
Guides would be required to go along with the fishermen, so Silverthorne says the competition could create jobs for residents across the island. The two winners of Path to Prosperity will be announced in February. The annual competition started in 2013 and has awarded a total of $610,000 to 19 winners. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
A scientist who dedicated his life to documenting the changing Arctic died this spring on a research trip near Kotzebue. Bob Stottlemyre returned year after year to the Agashashok River to assemble long-term records of a rapidly warming ecosystem. Alaska Public Media's Laura Fillion brings us this remembrance.
Bob Stottlemyer spent decades quietly working on climate research, and he continued it for many years after he retired, funding his trips out of his own pocket to maintain continuity in his measurements. Stottlemyer died earlier this spring while on the Agashashok River, conducting his annual research. Longtime friend Susan Georgette lives in Kotzebue and is the retired manager of the Selawik Refuge. She remembers Stottlemyer's dedication.
Well, when I think of Bob, I think of Bob as a consummate scientist. He believed in data, especially long-term data that clearly pointed to where things were heading or where we were heading or the environment was heading.
Stottlemyer studied water quality on the Agashashok, a tributary of the Noatak River, for more than 30 years, traveling to remote field sites into his 80s. In the 1970s, he helped write and compile research that aided in the passage of the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts during the Nixon administration. Ecologist Patrick Sullivan met Stottlemyer in 2006 while studying for his PhD.
What's really unique about what Bob was able to do is that he had the endurance to go back year after year after year, starting in like the mid-1990s. All the way up until this summer to collect these, to make these same measurements over and over again, to assemble these long-term records that are extremely valuable for us.
An ecologist who held degrees from Duke University and Pennsylvania State University, Stottlemyer explored the changing face of North America's boreal forest, from its northern reaches here in Alaska to its southern edge in Isle Royale National Park in Michigan. In an article for the National Park Service, Stottlemyer wrote that ecotones, the boundaries between two ecosystems, are particularly vulnerable to what he called stressors, mostly changes in climate. And that's what he did year after year, traveling to the Agashashok site. Study the chemicals present in the river and let them tell a story of change. On May 31st, his body was discovered on a small sandbar on the river. He was reportedly still holding the line to his kayak when a pilot spotted him. He was 82 years old. Sullivan says Stottlemyer's death was fitting for a scientist who cared so deeply about the region he studied.
It's really sad that Bob is no longer with us, but I think that, I take some solace and I think knowing that if Bob could have chosen how he wanted to go, that this, the way that it actually played out would have been as close as possible to what he would have wanted.
Sullivan says there are plans to continue the important work Stottlemyer was doing on the Agashashok River. In Anchorage, I'm Laura Fillion.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Claire Strempel in Juneau, Olivia Eberts on the Yukon River, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Eric Stone in Ketchikan, Wesley Early and Laura Fillion in Anchorage, and Angela Denning in Petersburg. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.